Hello again, and welcome to Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews and conversations with people just like you, whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita.
And I'm Jean Marie. Today we are talking about Ebola, a disease that continues to raise fear, questions, and a lot of confusion whenever it appears in the news.
And that fear is understandable. Ebola has a reputation for being extremely severe, but the public conversation often leaves out important facts about how it spreads, how it's treated, and what really matters when outbreaks happen.
Exactly. People hear the word Ebola and often think of panicking, but accurate information is what helps people respond wisely.
Well, let's start with the basics, Jean. What is Ebola?
Ebola disease is a severe, often fatal illness caused by viruses in the ortho Ebola virus genus.
Okay.
Several species exist, but only some have caused large outbreaks in humans.
So when people say Ebola, they may be talking about a family of viruses, not just one single thing.
Right, like influenza, it could mean,
many.
Many.
Yeah.
Right, and that distinction matters because different Ebola viruses don't all have exactly the same, don't actually behave all in the exact same way, and not all of them have the same vaccinations associated or treatments available.
Well, for listeners who want a simple picture, Ebola is not something that spreads casually. It's a virus that requires a much closer, more direct kind of contact to move from person to person.
And that's one of the most important things to understand. Ebola spreads through direct contact with blood or other body fluids from someone who is sick or from contaminated objects like needles or medical equipment. It does not spread through the air, like influenza or measles.
Or the flu. Oh, yeah, influenza. You already said that.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Well, like a cold.
That alone should help reduce some fear, especially, in hospitals, nurses and doctors are trained to wear gloves, be careful when there's bodily fluids. So hopefully that's holding down the outbreaks. But being near someone is not the same thing as being exposed.
Exactly. Casual contact, like sitting next to someone, is not how Ebola spreads. And the real risk comes from direct contact with bodily fluids or contaminated materials.
Well, what about animals?
Mm-hmm.
People often hear that Ebola may originate in wildlife.
Right. The virus is believed to come from an animal reservoir, like bats. And then with spillover into humans through infected animals or their fluids. So like if you think about like a fruit bat biting into
a piece
of fruit and then a human going and eating that same fruit and getting the saliva and ingesting that saliva. That's why outbreak prevention includes avoiding contact with sick or dead wildlife in affected regions. You also don't want to get bit by an infected animal.
Right. So Ebola is a zoonotic disease.
Mm-hmm.
With serious human-to-human transmission once it starts spreading in a community.
Yeah, that's a good observation.
Well, let's talk about symptoms. What should people know about Ebola?
Well, symptoms for an Ebola infection usually begin after an incubation period, which can be anywhere between 2 to maybe 21 days.
Wow,
person.
That's a long time.
Yeah. Early symptoms often include fever, fatigue, muscle pain, headache, and sore throat. As the disease progresses, people may develop, vomiting, diarrhea, abdominal pain, rash, and in some cases, bleeding or organ dysfunction.
Well, that sounds very serious.
It is. But the early symptoms can look like a lot of other infections at first, which is part of why rapid recognition matters so much during an outbreak.
Because early treatment can make a real difference, right?
Yes. And early intensive support care improves survival rates. And that includes fluids, electrolyte replacement, symptom management, and close monitoring.
Well, supportive care sounds straightforward, but it's doing a lot.
It really is. In Ebola, good supportive care can be life-saving.
What else should people understand about how serious Ebola could be?
The disease has a high fatality rate, though it does vary by, you know, outbreak, virus type or variety, and the quality of care that someone receives. Historically, rates have ranged, you know, drastically. And the average case fatality rate is often cited to be around 50%.
That's
a high number.
That's a high number.
Yeah.
Well, when people hear that number, they should always, also remember that it's not fixed.
Right.
It depends on the circumstances and the resources available.
Exactly. Outcomes improve when patients are found early, are identified early, isolated appropriately, and given high quality care. That's why supporting organizations like the World Health Organization or,
Doctors Without Borders.
Doctors Without Borders, which now has a new name. Red Cross, Red Crescent, Red Star, okay. Red Diamond, those, you know, or just, you know, providing care, providing support, can make a difference.
Well, there's also a lot of public attention about current outbreaks.
Sure.
What should listeners know in general terms?
Well, this year that we're recording in 2026, Ebola outbreaks in Central Africa drew global attention once again, including outbreaks that occurred in the Democratic Republic of the Congo and Uganda. Public health authorities treated them very seriously because of cross-border spread is always a concern when cases appear near travel routes or in densely connected regions.
And public health response is about much more than just treating one person at a time.
Definitely. Outbreak control relies on a package of measures, including surveillance, contact tracing, lab testing, safe and dignified burials, infection prevention and control, isolation of individuals that are found to be carrying the disease or infected with the disease, vaccination when available and relevant, and community education.
Well, community education is often underestimated, isn't it?
Sure. It is. If communities understand what Ebola is, how it spreads, and when to seek help, response becomes faster and more effective.
Well, let's pause on the transmission for a moment.
Okay.
Because this is where a lot of myths show up.
Sure.
What are some of the common misunderstandings?
Well, one big myth is that Ebola is an airborne disease. In the way that people imagine, you know, respiratory viruses, but it's not. Another is that it spreads through ordinary social contact, which it doesn't. Another misconception is that a person is dangerous before they are sick. So when they're acting normally and you're in, you know, associated with them, that could transmit the disease. In general, people do not spread Ebola prior to being symptomatic.
Oh, that's a very important part.
Sure. The infection or infectious period starts when symptoms start, and the risk becomes much greater when the person has direct fluid exposure or severe illness.
So if a person has no symptoms, they are not a typical source of spread.
Right.
Okay. What about the family and caregivers of somebody who's sick?
That's a great question. They're at high risk if they come into contact with bodily fluids without protection. That's why gloves, gowns, eye protection, and masks are indicated for, and then also the safe handling of linens and waste, and in careful infection control is also important in vaccination for those individuals.
It sounds like it's one of those diseases where the practical details really matter a lot.
They do. Protection is not just a general idea, it's very specific. The right equipment and the right procedures reduce risk dramatically.
A lot of people also want to know if there are vaccines and treatments.
There are licensed vaccines and two FDA-approved treatments. The vaccine is used in high-risk settings, especially during outbreaks and for people with exposure risk.
And the treatments are what?
Two monoclonal antibody treatments are approved for Ebola disease caused by the Zaire species. They're not universal treatments by any means. for every Ebola virus or subspecies, which is why the exact outbreak and strain really matters. So identifying that is vital.
Okay. That's a major nuance. So when a headline says Ebola, the species involved can change the available medical tools.
If for some forms of Ebola, there are currently no licensed vaccines or specific treatments. And in those situations, supportive care and infection control are the mainstays. So more research and dedication to treating and vaccination production for those forms is still needed.
Well, that's also why the outbreak response has to be very coordinated.
It does. The public health system has to move quickly to identify the strain, confirm cases. That's what I was looking for, different strains. Trace contacts and use the tools that are actually effective for that specific outbreak.
Well, let's talk about vaccination in the real world. Mm-hmm. When people hear about Ebola vaccines, what should they know?
Well, they should know that the vaccine use depends on the species involved or the strain involved, the outbreak setting, and public health guidance. So these are not routine vaccines by any means. They're not just out there for the general public. And they're probably not recommended by your travel doctor either. They are typically targeted tools used for specific risk situations, and it may be in areas of outbreak and for individuals who will be coming in contact with them, with that population, you know, medical personnel that will knowingly will be treating an outbreak of Ebola.
So it's kind of like when we had the COVID vaccine initially, everybody got it because it was so rampant. But then as people started isolating, wearing masks, taking other...
I think it's more like yellow fever and just different things where it's not, there's always a benefit risk.
That they have to balance.
Yeah. So in this case, it's for individuals who are going to be in a high risk environment.
Okay. So it's not like your standard childhood vaccine program.
No. It's outbreak specific and exposure specific.
Okay. Well, I'm wondering where Ebola cases come from geographically. Why do outbreaks keep appearing in certain regions?
Well, it's, in areas where it's endemic. So there are environmental and ecological factors, including animal reservoirs, local health infrastructure, population movement, and the ability of the virus to spread before a case is recognized. Outbreaks can be very difficult to control, and when there's limited resources and ongoing instability in that region and things of that nature.
Okay, so that means the disease itself is only part of the challenge.
Yes, social and logistical conditions around the outbreak shape how bad it can actually become, and that they do play into the whole.
Okay. Thing. Well, that's true for many infectious diseases, really, yes. When you think about it.
Yeah.
But it feels especially important here.
Yes, it is. Ebola response requires a strong infrastructure, rapid communication, community trust, and safe healthcare practices, and the ability to provide all of those.
So the hospitals and clinics, they play a role, right?
Yes, a huge one. Healthcare settings can either, put a stop to an outbreak or amplify it if infection control fails. Training, personal protective equipment, isolation protocols, and safe waste handling are all essential. And just having the ability to provide those in a healthcare setting is
important. Right, because healthcare workers are obviously at the front line.
Yes, and they need support, protection, and clear guidance.
Well, there's also a fear about caring for somebody with Ebola, like a family member. What
sure.
should families understand?
Right. Well, as we said, supportive care is vital. They should understand that care needs to happen under public health guidance. Unprotected home care can be very dangerous for them and their family. Patients need...
Unprotected is the key.
Yes. Patients need prompt medical evaluation And suspected cases should be managed by trained teams.
Well, that makes sense.
And families also need emotional support. Ebola can isolate patients and communities. So communication matters as much as the medical response.
And what about the stigma?
Sure.
A disease like this can make people afraid of each other.
Yeah. Sadly, that's true. People may fear survivors, families, and whole communities, and that stigma can delay reporting, discourage care seeking, and make outbreaks very difficult to stop.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're avoiding care seeking,
yeah,
you know, you're kind of adding fuel to the fire there.
Right.
Well, which means that the response has to include compassion, not just containment.
Right. People survive outbreaks better when they trust the system and feel respected by it.
So the survivors, what do people need to know about them?
Survivors can face a long recovery period. Some have lingering fatigue, eye or vision problems, joint pain, and the psychological distress, especially if they've lost multiple family members. They may also need follow-up care and support long after discharge.
So survival is not the end of the story.
It's
the beginning of recovery.
Right.
And there's also the issue of safe burials. You
yes.
mentioned that. And that's kind of hard to discuss, but it is critical, right?
Yes. And it's important to realize that some traditional burial practices may involve contact with the body, which can be very risky if the person passed away because of complications due to or because of the Ebola virus and disease. Public health teams need to work with communities to provide safe and dignified burial practices that respect cultural values while preventing the further spread of the disease.
Yeah, well, that balance matters a lot.
It does. Safety without dignity can damage trust, and dignity without safety can increase risk. So good outbreak response teams need to include both of those.
Got it. So what should our listeners do if they're worried about Ebola after hearing about an outbreak?
Well, for most people in the world, the risk remains extraordinarily low unless they've been in an affected region and had direct exposure.
Mm-hmm.
If someone has traveled to an outbreak region or had close contact with a person or animal that may have had Ebola, they should contact their local public health officials or medical professionals immediately and follow their guidance.
Well, panic is certainly not the answer, but awareness helps, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, let's cover prevention in a practical way. What are the key measures that people should take to actually avoid, you know, getting Ebola to begin with?
Sure. Well, with most viral diseases, as usual, you know, you want to avoid direct contact with bodily fluids, especially from those individuals known to be or, you know, have Ebola or
yeah,
that are...
they've already been diagnosed.
Or someone that is, you know, has symptoms of some sort that are their individual, those individuals that are sick. So if you can avoid handling bodies without protection and, you know, if you haven't been trained in how to use personal protective equipment, then, you know, if you can avoid contact. You also want to avoid contact with sick or dead wildlife in affected areas. Just general things that help prevent disease transmission in general. Mm-hmm. Wash your hands regularly. Use protective equipment when indicated. And follow public health instructions if you're in a region with active transmission. If you're an individual visiting from a different country, make sure that you inform your consulate on your arrival and departure, and they can help keep you, you know, they'll notify you if there was something in that region. And then, you know, as always, consult your personal healthcare provider and let them know where you're going to be traveling, and they can give you some more professional advice.
Yes. Yeah. And healthcare workers, prevention includes strict infection control, right?
Yes, yes, absolutely, including correctly donning and doffing of protective gear, safe specimen handling, and proper patient isolation.
Well, you already talked about travelers.
A little bit, yeah. Travelers to affected regions should monitor guidance from public health authorities in that region, avoid high-risk exposure whenever possible, mm-hmm. and know where to seek care if symptoms do occur during or after travel. The key is not to ignore symptoms if there's a relevant exposure history.
Well, we should also mention that not every fever after traveling is Ebola.
Right. Many illnesses can cause a fever, but if someone has been in an affected area and is exhibiting the symptoms, Ebola has to be considered quickly because, you know, time here matters and, you know, treatment is important.
Right. So overall, is there anything hopeful in all of this?
Absolutely. Outbreak response has improved dramatically over time. We now have better diagnostic and getting correct diagnostic equipment to those areas affected is vital. Targeted vaccines for certain strains of Ebola are out there, and research and development is always, you know, in progress. Approved treatments for some Ebola viruses are out there as well, and stronger public health coordination has developed over the past decades.
Well, that's encouraging.
It's very encouraging. Ebola remains a very serious disease, but it's not a mystery illness anymore. And with rapid detection, strong infection control, and community cooperation, outbreaks can be contained.
So the big message is really Ebola is dangerous, but knowledge changes the equation.
Sure. Fear grows in the absence of information. So good public health work replaces panic with action and actionable
results.
Results.
Yeah. Okay. Well, before we close, what would you want our listeners to remember the most?
That Ebola spreads by direct contact, again, with bodily fluids. It's not casual contact. We're in the air. Early symptoms require immediate attention or urgent attention, and supportive care saves lives. And that outbreak control depends on the whole community, not just one individual.
Well, that's a good, strong summary. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And I'll add that survivors and families deserve care and respect, not fear and stigma.
Very important. Thank you. Thank you for helping make this complicated topic understandable.
Thank you.
This podcast is not intended to be a substitute for a professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast.
Thank you.
Till next week.